And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post Podcast, where All-Star is over. The NBA is off until Thursday night. Oh, my God. What are we all going to do? Talk to our families? That seems crazy. And so I thought this would be an ideal time to bring in a guy who very few people had heard of until Sunday at the All-Star game. And now I am thrilled to bring on one of the winners of All-Star Weekend, no longer an anonymous NBA fan, Dr. Nick Elam, the creator of the Elam ending, a variation of which was used to end the All-Star game on Sunday, the best All-Star game that, frankly, I can remember since my memory functions. Mr. Elam, Dr. Elam, professor of Ball State University, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for making time. This is probably one of the few times of the year where you have a little bit of downtime, and for you to spend some of that to speak with me, that's great. I appreciate it.
Well, it's my daughter's birthday today, which means that the last 5 days and the subsequent 2 days will all be birthday related. So that has sucked in a lot of my downtime. But so I just, you know, I was one of the people saying on TV and on my podcast as recently as Friday with Pablo Torre, look, I understand that this sounds complicated. People are making fun of it because, oh, it's quarter by quarter. And what I don't understand is target scores. People are going to like it. It's going to go well. I did not expect it to go down to literally next basket wins the game good. But you know, what, you were in Chicago. The league flew you out. I'm just curious, like, what has this been like for you? Because now people know your name, and this has been used in the basketball tournament, the winner-take-all tournament now for 2+ years. But this was its biggest exposure to a huge national audience. If it's a bust, that's what people are going to remember. And it was like literally the opposite. So what has this been like for you?
This has been a wild ride, and I appreciate the NBA did it upright. I mean, they treated me and acknowledged me behind the scenes with, yeah, like you mentioned, the trip to All-Star Weekend and putting me up at the Ritz-Carlton and giving me a car service and third row tickets and all this stuff. So, I mean, that was awesome. Even Saturday night after the dunk contest, I went back to the hotel bar, and 10 feet away from me, among all the beautiful people there, was Spike Lee. And I didn't have the guts to go over and talk to him, but who knows? Maybe one of these days Spike Lee will direct the Elam ending 30 for 30. We'll see.
So, you know, I will go into the origin story of this and how you created this idea. And your idea, this was, again, a variation of it that was used on Sunday. But I'm curious, like, after the game, what kind of feedback are you getting? I mean, did Adam Silver come up to you and say, hey, this really worked? I know Chris Paul has been a big backer of this behind the scenes and getting it into the All-Star game. I don't know if he got a chance to say hello to you. I mean, there's all sorts of gatherings and parties after All-Star, but as it succeeds, what's a conversation? What's a moment? What's something you're going to remember?
Yeah, so I always keep an ear to the ground for feedback because, again, somebody might see something that is a way to improve the format, because I always look at this with a very critical eye. So for one thing, just anecdotally, looking through feedback, say, on Twitter, I mean, honestly, I would say the Twitter feedback related to the Elam ending was 90% positive. And, you know, somebody once told me it's tough to get 90% of people on Twitter to like free beer and ice cream. And so for them to, for 90% of the people to have a positive reaction to the Elam ending on Sunday night was really great. As far as like NBA insiders, I mean, I happened to run into Mark Tatum, the deputy commissioner, shortly after the game. You know, his eyes lit up. He was excited about the way the game went. And I said, hey, you know, I think this is a keeper. So I don't always get a vote, but I would certainly hope that they're going to continue with the format like that. I mean, many people in the NBA front office were very gracious. I know that Tom Ryan and Tim Frank, Becca from the strategy and analytics department in the NBA, they went to great lengths to make sure that I got a post-game photo with Anthony Davis, which is something that I wanted to do. So, I mean, they really treated me right. And, again, the positive feedback has been overwhelming from people who are inside the basketball world and people on the fringe like me.
Did you explain who you were to AD? Did he already know who you were? Did he say anything about how he enjoyed first of all, he did not miss the first free throw on purpose. Let's get that out of the way. Second of all, did he enjoy the experience of having like a free throw to literally end the game?
So our exchange was pretty brief, but, you know, I introduced myself as Nick Elam, that I'm the Elam ending guy. I think he recognized that concept for sure. And, I think he enjoyed, and one thing that was pretty common among all the players in their post-game press conferences or their post-game comments on the record were that they just enjoyed the intensity of the format down the stretch. And certainly as a fan, I enjoyed it too. I mean, I have never in my life seen an All-Star game that competitive or even anything even close to that. So I consider it to be a great success. And, you know, again, I think this is one step forward in seeing this format implemented more widely throughout the basketball world at various levels.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. So when I first wrote about this and was introduced to you 3 years ago now, and at that time, I ran your idea by a bunch of NBA people, and I joked even in the piece that every conversation went the same way. And by NBA people, I mean GMs, I mean people inside the league office up to and including Kiki Vandeweghe. Every conversation went like this. Oh, here we go. Another. Okay, Zach, give me the cockamamie idea. Okay, let's hear it. And then as I would explain it, the tone would change. That's interesting. And so at the time I wrote about it, and I wrote about it because the basketball tournament was going to use it. Kiki Vandeweghe said to me, it's more aggressive than anything we've ever considered for the G League. It's too aggressive for the G League right now, but we're going to watch it. We're going to watch it now that we have this other league this other tournament that's brave enough to do something we're not brave enough to do. We're going to watch it. We're going to see how it works. We're going to collect data. Well, now they've had data from two seasons of the TBT, right? Or three? Two or three? Three, I think, right?
Three full tournaments, but in 2017, they just did it on a partial basis for their preliminary round.
Okay, so
two plus.
So two plus our own All-Star game now. And they're all at All-Star Sunday when it's a big success. So what I'm curious about, if any of those thinkers, you don't have to name them, in the league office whose job it is to think about things like this, have any of them come up to you and said, you know, there's actually momentum for this, or maybe what Kiki said 3 years ago no longer stands as this being too aggressive for the G League? Have you gotten any indication that this is like a thing we might see in the NBA world?
Well, they keep things pretty close to the vest. And so, you know, to this point, I still haven't got a seat at the table. I think, you know, that's one of the things I would really love is to just have a seat at the table at some of these discussions, because I'm sure there are certain aspects of the format that they are discussing that I was taking a deep dive into 13 years ago. And, you know, I might be able to provide some insight on that. But so I can't speak for them. I would encourage you to reach out to them if you want to get their take. But my hunch would be that based on, I mean, just really the positive reaction and how great it looked on Sunday night, that this concept's going to live on somehow, some way.
Well, I'm going to be big. I'm going to hammer this in my column on Friday, and I'll hammer it now. The idea that this is too aggressive for the G League is now officially nonsense. I what is the downside of using this in the G League? I thought this was a good idea when I wrote about it, and we can talk about some of the issues that might come up with full-on implementation of it. But to me, the biggest argument against it, has always been, well, that's just not the way the sport is. Like, there's always a clock. That's just the way it's been. And anytime that's just the way it's been is the best argument against something, you know you have a good idea. Now, I'm not saying I think the NBA is going to adopt this ever or anytime soon, or that they should. I don't know. I haven't seen enough of it yet. But there's absolutely no downside to the G League doing it. And if you told me right now that in 50 years, this is just how basketball is played, like, I don't think that's completely insane. I wouldn't bet on it. I don't think it's likely. I think there are some things that would need to be worked out, and inertia always wins. But Kelly Dwyer already wrote about it, one of the all-time godfathers of online basketball writing. Let's just adopt it now. No, I think that's a little aggressive, but to me, it's just a no-brainer to try this in the G League. I don't know if you just do it in the regular season and not the G League playoffs or something, but I hope they do it.
Well, and I always appreciate you putting a good word in for it, even if, you know, not even necessarily endorsing it, but just saying, hey, give it a chance. Because, again, when you read about it or hear about it for the first time, this concept totally sounds like it's from outer space. But then you see it in action, you realize it's actually pretty simple and straightforward. And as far as, you know, who likes it, who doesn't like it, so far there's not a real profile of who likes it and who doesn't. It cuts across all ages and races and genders so far, and levels of basketball and experience and influence. But one of the things that I think is really cool is some of the strongest proponents of the Elam ending to this point are people who would consider probably consider themselves old school, people who have been immersed in the game for a long time, who just value good fundamental basketball, because that's what this, the spirit of this whole concept is. It's not meant to change the game. It's not meant as a gimmick. It is meant to simply preserve a more natural style of play through the end of every game. And so far, that's what we're seeing.
We've all had our fair share of sad breakfasts. Beige, plastic wrap, brick-shaped protein bars, day-old break room donuts, disgusting, frozen breakfast trays, no way. Not our finest moments. But now that McChicken breakfast sandwiches are on the McDonald's breakfast menu, we should never go back to those old, sad breakfasts. The McDonald's McChicken is a breakfast worth getting up for. It's time to change your life for breakfast. Buttery, crispy McChicken biscuits and savory, sweet chicken McGriddles, freshly prepared and now available nationwide, everywhere at McDonald's. That's how you wake up breakfast at participating McDonald's for a limited time. So you were sitting third row Sunday, huh?
I had great seats all weekend. Third row, I was on the side with the stage. I was on the side where they were shooting for three-point contest and dunk contest. It was a great vantage point, absolutely.
So from your third row, you realized once LeBron dunks the ball and gets his team within one of the target score of 157, that the game could end on a free throw. And if there was a criticism is too strong a word. If there was a worry or something that people who were not even necessarily skeptics, but thoughtful people who were trying to play out, okay, let's play out some potential downsides of this idea. Let's have a back and forth with me. 3 years ago, 2 years ago, they said, well, we will see games end on free throws and you have to be okay with that. And that might be an issue. So that reality is now staring you in the face when Team LeBron gets within one. What are you thinking at that moment? And it does end up ending on a free throw. Were you disappointed, or do you actually think, well, okay, this is one of the scenarios that people feared, and it still ended up being exciting, so I'm almost kind of relieved that it ended that way?
You can count me as one of the people who would rather see a game end on a high-flying dunk or a three-pointer or something like that. But, you know, yeah, we've seen some games that end with a free throw, including Sunday night. And TBT games, it's around 15 to 20% of games so far have ended with a free throw. And that so far has been one of the biggest criticisms, like you said. And I don't shy away from any criticism, any feedback. I consider it all constructive. But to me, when I hear that, I say, wait a second. If you don't like seeing games decided by free throws, then you should absolutely love the Elam ending, because it is the norm under the regular format to see games decided by free throws, and it's the exception under the Elam ending. So over the years, I have tinkered with ways that maybe you could reduce the number or the percentage of games that ends on a free throw, or maybe even eliminate it altogether. So far, I'm not in love with any of those modifications. I think it would introduce some unintended consequences. So, you know, right now, I think we just have to be willing to accept that, you know, a small percentage of games might end with a free throw. Don't let perfect be the enemy of good, or don't let perfect be the enemy of improvement. And I think that didn't, I think overall, I think people have to be honest. That was the best fourth quarter, all included, that we've seen in the All-Star game in recent memory.
Oh, it's, and I tweeted in the first quarter, because the first quarter was a dog crap All-Star game quarter. Nobody played any defense. Everybody just walked in for dunks. It was awful. It was a blowout in favor of Team LeBron, I think, so that the charity element didn't even come into play like it did in the third quarter. But I tweeted during that quarter, I still think the fourth quarter has a chance to be good because of this ending. And it ended up being good. And I'll go you one third further. I didn't care that it ended in a free throw. And I'll tell you why. Number one, it was really, really exciting to watch Team LeBron within three of the target score navigate in real time an unprecedented for them, because this hasn't been the rule, decision of, do we go all out and hunt a three? Which they did. I mean, LeBron took essentially a half-court shot a couple possessions before the game ended. Or do we take an uncontested two that prolongs the game but gets us within a point of the target score, if we can get an uncontested two, which the defense essentially ended up conceding a two. And to me, that strategic excitement, the taking the uncontested two opened up the possibility of a free throw winning the game. But because of that prelude, the free throw itself kind of became exciting. So I wondered what you thought watching Team LeBron navigate that, and how teams in TBT, how have they navigated that? Have you seen teams just go all out for three? Have you seen that backfire and the other team gets back in the game?
So, yeah, I love the strategy talk. And again, I think that this does not, I don't think the Elam ending stifles strategy. I think it opens up all new strategies, and really it opens up your full complement of plays and players late in the game. You know, under the regular format, we use the word strategy, but I don't know, strategy is kind of a grown-up word, and I think in order to call something a strategy, it has to work some of the time, and you have to have other options to choose from. And when it comes to that late-game deliberate fouling strategy, it hardly ever works, and you really don't have any other choice. I'm not even sure we can call that a strategy. So the Elam ending opens up more strategy, and when it comes to TBT, yeah, we've seen some teams get very three happy when they are within 3 points of the target score, even if they've got the lead. And we have absolutely seen that backfire on some teams. So I think if you've got, you know, if you've got the chance to end it with a three, if you've got a great look from three, that's fine, but don't force it.
I loved it. And even, you know, I saw, I was watching High Noon yesterday, and Bomani Jones and Pablo Torre were talking about how, well, it was so disappointing that the game ended on a non-shooting foul, and we would need to tweak the rules to legislate that out. I didn't even mind that, and the reason I didn't mind that was because Kyle Lowry had gotten stuck on Anthony Davis on a switch, and Anthony Davis ducked in from the right corner underneath the rim, and as LeBron's entry pass was in midair, Kyle Lowry kind of dragged him to the floor. That's a non-shooting foul. I get that. But it's pretty damn close to a shooting foul, because if Anthony Davis catches the ball, he's just going right up with it, and it's a dunk, and the game is over. Like, it's not as if it ended on like a completely run-of-the-mill reach-in 50 feet from the rim or something like that, which seems like something you could easily legislate out. It ended up on a non-shooting foul that was like pretty damn close to a real shooting foul.
Yeah, I'm with you. You know, again, free throw is not my favorite way to end it, but I think we have to be willing to accept that a small percentage of games are going to end that way. And again, the more and more that detractors of the Elam ending format are outspoken and say that ending games with free throws is the fatal flaw of the format, to me, that's them telling on themselves. And, you know, again, because that is bringing more attention to the fact that it is the norm under the regular format to see games decided by free throws. So, again, I do not shy away from that at all.
Also, if he misses both of those free throws and his team loses, like, that's an exhibition game, and you remember that forever. If that happens in the NBA Finals, I almost feel like you're a Scott Norwood kind of situation, where you're like a field goal kicker who misses a game-winning field goal. And I feel bad for the players, because that's an enormous amount of pressure. And there are missed free throws in the NBA lexicon that we all remember, like Nick Anderson missing four free throws in a row in the 95 finals. But there are other missed free throws that potentially swung games and series. Like, how many people really remember Kawhi Leonard missing a free throw down the stretch of game six of the 2013 finals before Ray Allen hits the shot? Like, diehard fans remember that. Spurs fans remember that. Maybe Heat fans do. But it's not etched into your brain with the permanence of, like, if Anthony Davis had actually missed both of those free throws and they lost, that's like a Nick Anderson, everybody remembers that forever kind of thing.
I love what you just said there. I'm going to say a few things about that. One thing I remember about that 2013 NBA Finals is that people were leaving the building because the Heat were down by 5 points, because we're so conditioned to thinking that a 5-point deficit is impossible to overcome. So you might remember people, infamously, fans leaving the building and not being able to get back into the game, because again, we're just so conditioned to thinking that if you're down by five late enough in the game, you can't come back. And with the Elam ending, you always feel like you're in the game, even if you're down five or in that range. When it comes to, players being remembered for missed shots, I know we romanticize about the pressure of a buzzer beater shot, but I'll ask you, and I'm not trying to stump you, I really want to know, can you remember any player in the history of basketball who's truly remembered as a GOAT for missing a buzzer beater shot.
Goat is strong. I mean, you remember some flashbulb misses. Like, I think people remember Courtney Lee missing an alley-oop in game one or two of the LA-Orlando finals. I think people remember Tim Duncan missing what they remember as a bunny in game seven of Heat Spurs in 2013, but was not a bunny. So, like, there are definitely open shots that you remember being missed. Some of them have to do with who the passer was. Like, Donyell Marshall misses an open corner three, but well, because it's from LeBron, everybody remembers that LeBron passed him the ball. But I get your point. I get your point because and I almost feel pity because I think it sucks that people get remembered for failures like that. Like, everywhere Nick Anderson goes, he has to look around the room knowing that if there's one thing NBA fans in the room know about him is that he missed four free throws in a row. Like, that kind of sucks.
Yeah, and so I think with the current format, because, you know, again, we're used to seeing teams score over 1 point per possession throughout the course of the game, but when you get to a true buzzer beater situation, that plummets to about 0.2 points per possession. And I mean, the clock truly does turn the last possession or the most meaningful possession into a blooper reel, and to me that's unsatisfying, and I think that's why, you know, players just kind of get a free pass for missing shots like that. I always try to think of it what it would look like in another sport. To me, it would be like seeing Mike Trout step up to the plate in the bottom of the ninth and then have to bat left-handed. And it's like, well, yeah, I guess that's cool if he gets a hit, but I think I'd rather see him at his best when the game's on the line. And that's the same for me with the Elam ending. I'd rather see a team get to take their best shot at the end, and maybe it does add some pressure. Maybe a player would be remembered a little bit more for missing a shot like that. But, you know, again, I think seeing teams and players at their best is more exciting. Even though the Elam ending might introduce that sort of a GOAT factor, I still think the players should and would love the format for many reasons. Most of all, from kind of a marketability standpoint, I think their images would be tied to so many of these game-ending shots that would help their brand, and they could market themselves in whatever way they could. I really think that would be beneficial to them. And then also, you know, one residual effect of the Elam ending is that it eliminates overtime. And I think over the course of a season, you're eliminating some wear and tear on players in that regard. That's one thing I actually saw as maybe a downside of the Elam ending years ago, but I actually think it's a good thing now. I researched over the years how often overtime is able to live up to the excitement of regulation, because obviously if a game goes to overtime, that means regulation had to go down to the buzzer some way or another, make or miss. And it's less than half the time that overtime goes down to the buzzer. So it kind of sets up for an anticlimactic finish, and I don't think we're going to miss overtime as much as what we might think initially.
Let me ask you a couple of questions before we let you go. One of the things that the NBA thinks about a lot and thought a lot about in relation to your proposal was, you know, the NBA has been grappling with it. Is our league too predictable? Are the outcomes of games too predictable, both in a macro sense, like, you know, going in, Team X is really good in there at home and rested and blah, blah. And, like, it's hard to come back late in the game when you're behind. Now, that's less true now with the prevalence of threes, but when you introduced the Elam ending and when they started to learn about it, they thought, okay, we like the idea of more comebacks, of the game always being on the line, but we also don't, there's also a point where it's like too easy to come back, where you're not punished enough for being behind late in the game. So in TBT, what is the effect on the likelihood of a comeback, Ben, compared to if you played it out under a clock?
So the really striking stat from the current format, again, is that when a team has to resort to the fouling strategy late in the game, that they only come back and win the game about 1% of the time. And that excludes all of the blowout games where a team doesn't even bother with fouling. They feel like, hey, we're just going to concede here. So there's no exactly apples-to-apples comparison with TBT, with the Elam ending, because there's no situation where you're forced to foul. But just anecdotally, in 2019, it's a 63-game event. 13 of those games were won by a team that trailed at some point during the Elam ending. There were five additional games where a team was able to tie up the game during the Elam ending, even though they went on to lose. So it does add what I would call a healthy amount of unpredictability. I don't think that this gives an unfair advantage or disadvantage to the leading team or the trailing team. But what I do think it does, and I think this is a very good thing, I think the Elam ending takes away some of the artificial disadvantages that the trailing team faces, where they get to a point where they now can't rely on defensive stops anymore. They are so desperate to stop the clock that they are willing to hand away free points at the foul line. And then when they're on offense, where they have to rush and force up ugly shots, where they are no longer able to get their best look, it takes away those artificial disadvantages. And now they still face a disadvantage. I mean, they're trailing going into the final stretch, but I think it's a better indicator down the stretch of it's a better way to prove who's the better team.
Another issue that I wonder how real it proved. I bet it did prove real is people, you know, the point of the Elam ending is to have less intentional fouling, but everything has unintended consequences. And this brought up a scenario where people thought, well, there's definitely going to be intentional fouling in this specific scenario, which is if my team is ahead and we're 1 or 2 points from the target score and the other team has the ball and they're 3 points from the target score, well, I should absolutely hack them so they can't get off a three that can win the game before I have a chance to get a two or a free throw to win the game. Now, I don't necessarily think that that's a problem because teams foul up three in the NBA already to prevent three-pointers from being launched, but have you seen that behavior play out in TBT?
I love this discussion, and it reminds me how far this concept has come because, again, back in 2007, here I am sitting in my apartment at my desk, scribbling out this scenario, which I call and still call the 3-2-1 scenario, just like you said, and thinking, yeah, if I was a team in that situation on defense, I would absolutely foul, and I still think that that's true today. Now, as you mentioned, there's a rough equivalent to that under the current format, so even if you consider that to be a flaw, it's not even a new flaw. And then if you compare that to the widespread deliberate fouling that we see late in games currently, you know, this 3-2-1 scenario, it happens in a much smaller percentage of games. It's not a repeatable strategy. It almost guarantees and sets up an exciting finish. So there are, again, reasons why I think it's more forgivable. We have seen that scenario arise in TBT. And going back to 2017, there's been 13 games where that situation has come up. In 8 of those games, the team decided to foul. And they ultimately went on to win 4 of those games and lose 4 of those games. There's 5 games where a team on defense decided not to foul. They decided to play it out. And they only won 1 of those 5 games. So, again, in that small sample, we're seeing, again, it doesn't guarantee a win by any means, but you're better off fouling in that scenario. But, again, I think it's more forgivable than all those for all those reasons I mentioned before. And I do think that we could see in TBT 2020 a fix for that, where it would totally take away that that inclination to foul.
Interesting. Well, I'll be staying tuned for that. Look, no idea is perfect. There are problems with every kind of idea. There are unintended consequences, all of that. What's the criticism or what's the issue that keeps you up at night? What's the thing that resonates most with you as if there is a flaw here, maybe it's not a fatal flaw or whatever, but if there is something that I'm worried about over a larger scale, if this ever had a chance, this is the problem. This is the issue that we have to resolve, or this is the thing that keeps me up at night.
I wouldn't say that there's anything that keeps me up at night. Because I really am that confident in the format. I really feel like I've scrutinized it as much as I can, that we've either implemented or we've got modifications in the back pocket if ever necessary. So I mean it when I say that there's nothing necessarily that from a soundness standpoint that keeps me up at night. As far as just a perception, it's still the top criticism of the Elam ending is that people do not believe that it could ever live up to the excitement of a buzzer beater. And on paper, I always thought that it could do that. And even seeing it in action, I feel even more strongly that these games that come down to a sudden death situation in TBT, and I've been in the arena for plenty of these games, when that final shot goes through the net, it still has that look and that sound and that feel of a buzzer beater. And even a lot of games that are decided by 4 points or more, that it still has that excitement of a buzzer beater. And I think what's even better is that, you know, it takes out all the guesswork. You can go ahead and celebrate, go crazy. You don't have to worry about an official blowing their whistles, telling you have to stop celebrating and go back to your bench for a clock review. You know, it takes out all the guesswork there. So I think that I've always maintained that the elimining is a way that we can keep and enhance the things that we already enjoy about late game play, and it can eliminate or alleviate the things we don't enjoy.
Did you go out for a drink on Sunday? Did you get like a $150 glass of champagne? Did you do something to mark the night for yourself?
I did. So my guest and I, she and I went out for a nice bottle of champagne after the game, a nice dinner there, and it was just a wonderful night because it was absolutely a milestone for this project. And, you know, whenever it reaches a milestone like this, it's fun for two reasons. One is because I get to look back and think about all the progress that this project has made all throughout the years. But the other reason is because I get to look ahead and think about exciting possibilities for the future. And I think we are going to see this concept continue to grow throughout the basketball world.
Yeah, I don't know what the future is. I don't know. You know, I'm having some conversations with league officials over the next couple of days. I'm interested. You know, everyone's sort of recovering from All-Star. It's been hard to get people on Monday, and we're recording this midday Tuesday. I'm interested to see what they say and their feedback is, because there's only, if it doesn't go into the NBA, you know, the big three uses a target score from the beginning, so it's already there in a different way. If it doesn't go somewhere in the NBA, I don't know, NBA, NCAA, like, I don't know where else it can go, really, where it would have momentum, but it's in the ether now, and it's not going away, and I would be surprised, I mean, again, this is having talked to nobody, I would be very surprised if they didn't use this in the All-Star game next year. Maybe it's not plus 24, maybe it's plus something else, but it's in the ether, and it's not going away, and I think you gained a lot of supporters for it on Sunday, so I'm happy for you, and I can't even imagine what it must feel like. So did you go out for steak? Did you have a good Chicago steak? I feel like the Chicago steak lives up to the hype.
So it was pretty late by the time we got back to the hotel after the game. So there was a nice Italian restaurant nearby, so we had a great Italian dinner that night. But so didn't have the steak that night, but, you know, take a rain check on that. We'll do that. We'll do that another year, maybe. But I absolutely think there are many great testing grounds for this format, whether they're associated with the NBA or the NCAA or even just international leagues, things like that, or high schools. I mean, all over the place, I think you can see this format implemented. And, you know, again, a part of this is excitement, and part of this is a little bit of self-advocacy because, again, I put a lot of work into this. I want to make sure that I'm credited as the originator of this. So it's been great to see so many people, whether I know them or don't know them, whether they are inside the basketball world or on the fringe, really stepping up. Even if the NBA has not officially used that elimining name, even though they did on NBA TV on Friday, you know, many people stepping up to say, hey, you know, this is Elam's idea. Let's not forget that.
All right, Nick, go on the rest of your media tour. I expect to see you on Jimmy Kimmel Live or something in the next couple of nights, the way this is going. But thanks for making a little time, and I'll see you down the line.
That sounds great. Thanks so much.
The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.